Oh, snap.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and where friends don't let friends feed kibble. And today, Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K, is with me. You know, I've always said to my listeners, if you have a question that you want us to answer here on the podcast, well, just send me an email and we will talk about it here. So people are doing that. Carmen Yeager has sent us an email, Dr. Judy. So here is our first question of today. She said, could you discuss how raw feeding benefits senior dogs with incontinence, both urinary and fecal? Her dog is a 10-year-old Dane, and they've been dealing with fecal incontinence for about 2 years. She tried all the traditional vet recommendations, but have come up short. And she does have some management strategies in place. But in addition to the incontinence, he has rear end weakness, poor perception, and he has arthritis. Now, he's a 10-year-old Dane, and he's a big dog. But one thing that there's a little bit, so she says, I haven't completely sold her on eating raw, but I'm working on it. So I don't know if that means that she's mixing in some things that could be inflammatory. But what are your thoughts about, I don't really have any tips on how raw feeding can specifically help with urinary incontinence and fecal incontinence. Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things we need to look at the cause. You know, in a 10-year-old large breed dog like a Great Dane, typically we're going to have some neurologic deficits that kind of goes with the territory there. So if you have, you know, some true nerve impingement or, you know, something like that going on, yeah, raw feeding is not going to magically make that go away. However, providing optimal nutrition still is going to be the best course. You know, we want to provide the body with as many nutrients as possible because we want those nerves conducting normally. You know, nerves conduct, you know, via electrolyte changes and things like that. So the more balanced we have the body and the more we're supporting the body nutritionally, that could potentially improve the situation. I mean, if you have a nerve that's just, you know, blocked or impinged, you know, pinched in the spinal column or something like that, you know, raw feeding isn't going to magically make that go away. So we have to be realistic. I think as far as the fecal incontinence, definitely removing anything inflammatory from the diet. Because if you have, like in kibble, where you have things that are inflaming the gut, you're going to increase gut motility, which means that what the dog eats moves through faster. It's not as well digested. So you have larger volumes of softer stool, which, you know, make it harder to clean up and make it harder for the dog to have control. So if you have, those intestines are rumbling and moving quickly, it's just like, you know, if you have diarrhea, you know, sometimes you just don't have as much control. If you have all this extra motility in there, that could create even less control. And then just from a purely management standpoint, you're going to have smaller, firmer, more compact stools. So if you do need to be picking them up in the house, it's definitely going to improve that from a management perspective.
Yeah, I would much rather pick up harder poops than softer poops. Wouldn't we all? So yeah, that's good advice. Hey, we're talking today with Dr. Judy Jasek. She is the holistic vet. She is the cancer prevention vet. You can find Dr. Judy at cancer-vet.com. drjudyholisticvet.com or drjudyholisticvet.com. You can get to her from anywhere you are in the country. You can sign up for her phone consultations. If you're lucky enough to be here in Colorado, you can visit her in person. And remember, here at Raw Dog Food and Company, we ship. We ship the raw. So it's real time. You just go to our website, you put in what you want and put in your shipping address and bada bing, bada boom. It'll tell you what the cost is and before you ship, check out. I want to ask you about this. What would acupuncture or something else that is outside the traditional veterinary model help with this particular issues that this Great Dane is having?
Yeah, it absolutely can. I have actually heard of electroacupuncture. I don't do acupuncture myself, but I have learned quite a bit about it over the years. And acupuncture, especially electroacupuncture, where they actually, you know, they put the acupuncture needle in and then they mildly stimulate it with an electric current. It's very mild. It doesn't hurt. I've had it done on myself. But it can actually help stimulate these nerves that are failing. So yeah, absolutely. It's worth a try. I mean, you kind of just don't know until you jump in and try something, because every case is different. And once you have neurologic deficits like this, it's going to be something you're managing. I mean, to think that you're going to make it completely go away is probably unrealistic. But you know, again, in holistic medicine, we look for additive effects. So acupuncture helps a little bit. The raw diet helps a little bit. You know, reducing inflammation in the body helps a little bit. And then we just make the whole situation more manageable and we keep the pet more comfortable.
Absolutely. Now, what would you say causes neurological deficits? Is this just a age thing, or is it a vaccine thing? Is it, we don't know? Can it be a plethora of things?
Yeah, I think, again, it can be multifactorial. And I wanted to throw in, too, chiropractic, along the lines of things you can do to help. If you have a spot of the spine that's kind of jammed up, that might be causing some pressure on a nerve, a chiropractic adjustment can definitely help with that. So I think we have to look at the age of the dog and how the symptoms occurred. If, you know, say you get a neurologic deficit that just shows up overnight and the pet's had a vaccine within the last week, well, then, yeah, we could be having an acute reaction to something. If this is something that's come on a little more gradually, we have an older animal, more than likely it's age-related, but it's not just age. What happens as animals age is they do tend to get some arthritis along their spine, and also what we call spondylosis, where you actually, when you look at the x-ray of the spinal column, you have these, they actually look like big kind of hooks on them. And it's a form of arthritis. It's a bony growth on the spine. And sometimes these bony growths can actually put pressure on the nerve roots. So that's just something that's not going to be occurring in a young animal. You can get slipped discs where part of the disc actually protrudes out and puts pressure on a nerve root or the spinal column. In the case of Great Danes, Dobermans, breeds like that are prone to what we call wobbler syndrome, which is a little different. That's an actual instability. It usually occurs in the neck. So if we have strictly hindend involvement, then it may not be necessarily be wobblers. It can show up primarily there, but usually if you've got something going on in the neck, you're also going to see some symptoms in the front leg as well. So wherever the lesion is, you're going to potentially see symptoms from that point on back. But what wobblers is where the vertebrae are unstable. And so they move more, and literally just the motion of the vertebrae can pinch the nerve roots or the spinal column. And usually those symptoms show up younger in the dog's life, because it's more of a congenital thing. It's not something that occurs gradually over time, usually by the time they're 3 or 4 years old, you'll start to see the symptoms if it's wobblers.
Carmen, I hope that helps. And we thank you so much for sending in your question here at the Raw Dog Food Truth. Remember, you can email me, Dee Dee, at rawdogfoodandco.com, and we will answer your questions. Okay. So another email that came in, this is from Tony. Tony was not happy with us, Dr. Jasek. He was not happy with us. He wasn't happy because he said he heard a podcast a while back about adding veggies to raw meals, and he felt that we frowned upon it. And he said, with over 14 years of feeding raw and about 30 years experience with himself eating raw foods and juicing, he said, why would you feed your animal a 100% protein diet? Because by adding ground up veggies, you're incorporating fiber, oxygen, vitamin, minerals, enzymes, and phytonutrients. So I said, well, Tony, juice on. That's how I said, I responded to him. I said, juice on, Tony. And so we had a little laugh about that. But he says, look, plants are truly living vibrational foods, especially the sprouted grasses and dark greens that you can't get from raw meats and organs. So here's the thing that I look at when I look at the raw diet. Mostly it should be protein. I don't frown upon dark leafy vegetables. I think dark leafy vegetables are fabulous. They're a natural binder of phosphorus to help it move it out of the body. They have antioxidants. But here's my issue, Tony. Plant proteins lack sulfur-containing amino acids. And if we know anything about sulfur-containing amino acids, that's how your dogs make taurine, cysteine, and methionine for their hearts. So we want to make sure, and also all the B vitamins that the dogs get from the protein. But what would you say, Dr. Judy, about the fact that, I hope Tony didn't feel like we were frowning on veggies, but look, dogs aren't vegetarians.
Right. And what I look at is what our dogs, meant to eat in nature. I mean, you don't see pictures of wolf packs out there with their blenders having smoothies for breakfast. You know, they're eating milk and beer.
I want that video if you do find that.
I know. And actually, I believe the truth of the matter is they can get a complete diet from animal-only products. They are not digestively equipped to eat a lot of plant material. It takes time in the digestive tract to break down those plant walls. Plant walls are very, very hardy, and it can be hard to break them down. And in your true herbivores, like cows and horses, they have parts of their digestive tract are huge fermentation vats, and that's how they break down this vegetable matter. And it's actually they then get their nutrition from the bacteria. The bacteria actually creating the vitamins. So they're not actually getting the nutrients directly from the plant material. And I guess my question when I hear that is, why do we not consider animal products, living foods? They certainly are, it's a harvested animal versus a harvested plant. And I think there's just as much vitality in the animal products as in the plant products. And by feeding animal products, we're feeding a more species appropriate diet. And when he says it's only protein, to me that is kind of saying, well, there's no other nutrients in the animal products, and that's completely false. I mean, when you combine a mixture of the animal part, so it's not just muscle meat, but you're including your organ meat, you're including your bone and the tripe and all these other things, you are getting complete nutrition, and it's in the form that the carnivore is meant to eat. You look at their teeth. They do not have grinding teeth like an herbivore does. They have these sharp shearing teeth. They are meant to eat animal products. And I think where raw diets can fall short is not enough of the different body parts. You know, if a wolf pack kills an elk, you know, they're eating all of those internal organs. They're going to, you know, eyes, brains, I mean, it all gets eaten, right? So there's a lot of nutrition in all the body parts. I think where raw diets can really fall short is I have seen people, especially people doing their own, where they're just feeding the muscle meat. That's definitely going to be nutritionally incomplete. But if we include all these other parts and fat, well-sourced animal fat, like the tallow and lard, there are vitamins in there that don't exist elsewhere in the food supply, such as vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin K2. The real essential nutrients show up in well-sourced animal fat. So I think it's not that I'm so much against, you know, I mean, I eat lots of vegetables myself, nothing against them, but I question that they are the most appropriate diet for a carnivore. The other thing you have to be really careful of these days, especially, is that all produce, even organic, is often grown in deficient soils. So anytime there's monocropping, where it's just where they're tilling the soil and they're just growing year after year after year, and they put fertilizer on to help the plants grow bigger and faster. But if the soil is nutritionally depleted and you've depleted all the natural microorganisms, those plants are very void of nutrition. And this has become a big problem. And like I said, even in organic's better because you're not using pesticides. But it's still, when it's mass produced, as organics become more popular, they're not necessarily grown in healthy soil. So we really don't know how much nutrition is in those plants. I think that with that in mind, potentially the nutritional content of the animal products would actually be more consistent.
There you go, Tony. We don't frown on veggies, but we do frown on a vegetarian diet for dogs. And Dr. Judy Jason, have you seen Royal Canin has a vegetarian blend for dogs? Now listen, if that prescription food, Royal Canin, which is crap, I'm just going to tell you, because we just did a webinar on this and we took our pet parents through the actual ingredients on that. And I don't see any reason you would feed a dog that. But now they've come out with a vegetarian diet for dogs. I am beyond bewildered. What the hay? What the raw? What is going on?
You know, I think it's just either capitalized. These companies, I mean, come on. If you read the ingredients and use even a little bit of common sense, even if you don't know a lot about nutrition, just common sense tells you these ingredients would not be healthy for a dog. If you actually read what's in them. And honestly, I think, and so what these companies are doing is these Royal Canin and Hill's and all these, they're owned by these big mega corporations. They're interested in the bottom line. They're interested in making money. They are not interested in the health of pets. Matter of fact, the sicker pets stay, the more money they make. And that's just the sad truth of the situation. And honestly, I think the only reason that they would come out with this is they're marketing to people who have chosen the vegetarian or vegan lifestyle. So they're going to feel better about feeding this, you know, vegetarian diet. And because it's got a, you know, prescription label on it, they're like, oh, well, that means it's got to be all balanced and it's got to be okay because it's coming from this company that my veterinarian recommends. So it must be healthy, right? And no, not so much. You are just setting your pet up for nutritional deficiencies, serious nutritional deficiencies, and poor health. You know, I mean, cancer, autoimmune disease, all of this stuff. It's just, that's probably bad enough. The prescription diets are bad enough. At least they, you know, sometimes have a little bit of meat protein in them, but to completely take the animal products out, you're setting your pet up for poor health without question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't get it. I don't get it. Now, I have a, speaking of veggies for dogs. So we have another, another pet parent who was feeding broccoli to her dog. She does do squash. Shot the broccoli because she said that it was causing him, his metabolism to slow. Now, I get it, Oprah.com, because Oprah's a definite expert on dog health, said that, there's a substance that slows production of thyroid hormones in broccoli, and it's goitrogen, goitrogen. So a number of foods that contain this goitrogen is broccoli, soybeans, spinach, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, peanuts, strawberries, cabbage, just to name a few, according to Oprah.com. But since I don't really believe that Oprah.com has all the answers, I'm going to ask you, Dr. Jasek, I mean, how much broccoli would it take? And would broccoli really slow down a dog's metabolism?
Well, it is true that the, so all of the cruciferous vegetables, everything in the broccoli, that family, that's broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, kind of all that family. I have heard that if you eat in people, you know, for sure, if you eat too much, it can disrupt normal thyroid function. But I think we have to, and I've actually heard this debated even in the naturopathic world, for people, like how much does it take? You know, if you're eating 3 pounds of broccoli a day, probably going to cause more than one imbalance in your body. You know, you're going to be throwing things, you know, out of whack. It's a lot. If you're eating a reasonable amount, you know, and of course, and every individual is different. So if you already have, like you had a thyroid condition, you had a dog with a thyroid condition, you already know you have low thyroid, then it might be more important to avoid the cruciferous vegetables. But I really think that a lot of these things, it's, we have to look at realistically at the amount and look at the, you know, the size of the animal that you're feeding, you know. So, you know, if you're feeding a 50-pound dog and, again, you're feeding them 6 or 8 ounces of broccoli a day, well, yeah, that maybe is a problem. A little bit added in probably is not going to contribute so much to the or make the thyroid disease worse or decrease thyroid function. I think what bothers me about stuff like this, claims come out and there's a lot of generalization. And the reality is we have to look at each individual case. Now, you know, again, we just talked about not feeding a lot of produce to pets, you know, to begin with. So I'd be inclined to pull broccoli out of the diet for that reason. But to don't believe every generalization that you hear. I mean, really scrutinize the information that you hear. Where is it coming from? And how, you know, we talked last week or the week before about the numbers and statistics and how do they come up with some of this stuff? I mean, I would do some digging. Don't just, even if it is Oprah, you know, don't just believe every generalization that you hear. And where did these numbers come up from? And did they prove true cause and effect? Because sometimes there's an association, like, okay, these plants have this substance in them that could potentially disrupt normal thyroid function. But has that really been worked out, really proven? Do we really know cause and effect? Because what happens as time goes on is a lot of these generalizations end up being debunked. So I think you have to be really careful about where you're getting your information and where it's sourced from.
Yeah. And, you know, just because you're feeding broccoli or something else, one of these cruciferous veggies, and your dog starts gaining weight, does not necessarily mean that it's slowing the metabolism. So we just have to make sure that we're looking at, you know, all the different factors that are involved. Now, this particular pet parent is also feeding squash. And this is coming from a holistic vet that she was seeing. But I asked the question, and the reason that I was asking this question is because she was reaching out for help because this particular dog gets scabs, these little sores on its underbelly and legs, and now his paws or something's going on with his paws. And so she's trying to figure out what's going on. Now, there's a lot of things, in my opinion, that's going on with this diet. This dog's on multiple supplements, okay, which you just wrote a fabulous article about supplements that we're going to get out to on our website. And it's on your website, which is drjudyholisticvet.com right now. Lots of supplements, lots of squash, and lots of baths. So every week, this dog is getting a bath. Besides the fact that the dog has been eating the same blend for a year. So there's a lot of things that are going on that we want to try to shift around. I think it's difficult for pet parents when they get information from a trusted vet, okay? They have a trusted holistic vet that has since retired. But and also, let me say this, that there was a allergy test that was done 2 years ago. And if you've heard me say this once, you've heard me say it 100 times, you can't live forever and a day on an allergy test. Meaning just because you had an allergy test 2 years ago, you stay away from all these other foods that that particular allergy test said that the dog was allergic to. Because that was at the time they were on kibble. There's been an entire metabolic shift. There's a lot of things going on. But so just given that information, Dr. Judy, what would you say that your first steps would be in this diet? Would it be pull the veggies out, pull the supplements out, let's get real basic, get on a different food, and start over?
Yeah, there's definitely things I would pull out of there. The squash, for one, especially if we have, if we're also having weight gain. So squash is a carb, and carbs, you know, raise the blood glucose, which raises insulin. Insulin is a fat storage hormone. So anytime there's more carbohydrate in the diet, they're going to be putting more fat on. And that also increases inflammation. So if we have something, you know, itchy skin, we have skin issues, I would definitely be pulling the squash out of the diet way before I would actually pull out the broccoli, as long as it's like a reasonable amount. I mean, between the two, I'd be pulling the squash out before I'd be pulling out the broccoli. And then, yeah, on the supplements, I'd be looking at the labels and seeing what's in there. And if there is any synthetic ingredients, any chemicals that you don't know exactly what they are, unless they're like a very basic whole food supplement with just a couple of ingredients. And there's, you know, some of these supplements will have 15, 20 different things. And if you don't know what every single ingredient is and what it's doing for your pet, then I would be stopping them. And getting down to a new baseline. Allergy testing, if the dog was eating kibble when it was getting allergy testing, I really feel that allergy testing on a kibble-fed dog is always going to be inaccurate because the gut's inflamed and we'll probably have leaky gut. I mean, there's no way you can have a healthy gut on a kibble-fed dog. And even if there's no outward gut symptoms, you know, loose stool or vomiting or anything like that, you're not going to have a healthy gut. And so you're not going to get an accurate allergy test. And I really feel that true food allergies are not that common. It's much more of a gut issue. So to your point about the allergy test, you might pick up some things that are true from the animal, for the animal at that point in time, but it really is a snapshot. If you could move forward then and you change the diet, then you, and you reran that test, you would probably get a completely different profile once you did the diet change. So yeah, I would be, I mean, first of all, looking at the supplements and the labels, but with that many supplements, I bet there's things that I would definitely be eliminating. And the bathing, you know, you have to look at what, you know, how the dog responds, you know, to the bathing. You know, if you give the dog a bath and it's just worse, then obviously that's not a good thing. Bathing every week, I would think, would be drying for most pets, unless you have a really, really like yeasty or real damp skin. And if you're bathing the dog once a week and the dog, it helps the dog feel better, that's one thing. But if you're bathing the dog once a week, just because you feel like it's a good thing to do and we're not making any progress or the dog's getting worse, then you may be causing more irritation. And also, we need to look at the ingredients in the shampoos. Just because it says natural, or, you know, you read the label and it'll say, oh, it's got a couple of these great ingredients in, but then you look at the whole ingredient list and you got 15 other chemicals in there. You know, you want to be going with as basic and natural shampoo as you can, and ideally organic. You know, just really, really avoid the shampoos that have a lot of chemical ingredients in. So if you read the label and you don't know what a bunch of the, you know, the ingredients are, then don't use it, because just that shampoo could also be contributing to the irritation.
This dog's only 3 years old. She is a golden. She's 104 pounds, and supposedly she should weigh 80 pounds. And this dog does walk 4 to 5 miles a day. A lot of pet parents will come to me and they'll say, I want a really low fat. And I have to look at the overall picture, and I'm saying, I don't think fat is the issue here. You know, if you're staying within the range of 8 to 12% fat, especially a dog that gets out and exercises, there's something else going on. Now, she's had the thyroid tested, and it came back at 3.7, mm-hmm. you know, which I believe is in the range. But mm-hmm. so I try to really get my pet parents to weigh out their food. Don't eyeball it. Weigh out the food. Really look at all of the other things that are going into the diet. Because I had someone else call me yesterday, little dogs, and she called because, which was my next question, and then I'll go on she called because that she just started feeding a raw a week ago. Okay. These are Poms. These are Pomeranians. And one of the Pomeranian's stomach was just really gurgling and making a lot of noise yesterday. So she called me and she said, do you think that there's some sort of bacterial infection going on? I said, no. If it was bacterial, he'd probably see, you know, which we don't see very often, but I mean, probably vomiting and diarrhea and something other than that, but just the gurgling of the stomach. No. But once I started talking to her, I found out, because she had made the statement that the dog had gained weight. But what I found out was that it was not only, she was not only feeding our blend, but then she was feeding chicken and she was feeding treats and she was feeding a lot of different food. And what I know is that ounces make a difference. If I increase mm-hmm. Asta, who is a 75 pound German, if I increase her food just by 2 ounces a meal, oh my gosh, within 3 days, you can see the body composition change. But so I think we've got to be realistic about what is going into the pet's body. So what causes a pet's stomach to gurgle? That was a question that she gave to me. And here was my answer, and I'm fine with you correcting me. But I said, look, if the dog has an anticipation of eating, let's say, like Pavlov's law, and all of this, you know, acid, this acid bath comes into the stomach, anticipating taking something out. There's nothing to take out. Maybe that's what causes it. There were not, I don't know if it was that day, but I think also there were some kibble treats that were involved. So, what's your assessment of a dog's stomach gurgling?
Well, you know, again, I would be looking at the whole situation, and I would say a dog that has just started on raw a week before, its intestinal tract is going through a big transition. You know, we're asking it to digest something different, and it's a huge shift, and you're shifting the microbiome, you're shifting lots of things in the dog's body. So in this case, I would say that is probably what's going on. And then I think we have to look at, well, is it a problem? Is this because there's going to be some normal intestinal motility in a dog, you know? So if you hear your dog's tummy rumble and, you know, now and then, and otherwise they're acting fine, it may just be normal gut motility. In a case like this, where we're going through a food transition, and again, I'd be looking at what exactly everything that's in the diet, then I think that would be the more likely case here, is that the intestinal tract is transitioning to the new diet. And if you're feeding kibble and raw, you're really confusing the digestive tract. So that would be a big contributing factor in my mind, because you're trying to train it to digest raw, but then you're giving it some kibble, which has a completely different digestive process. So you're really kind of messing things up that way. And, you know, as far as the weight gain, it's the carbs that put the weight on, not the fat. Feeding more fat in the diet. So I do a lot of work with ketogenic diets because I work with a lot of cancer patients. Feeding a higher fat content diet using ketogenic principles actually trains the body to burn fat. This has been proven and documented in people with diabetes that were obese. I have read studies where they actually would put people on diets that were calorically 60 to 70% fat, and they would drop weight like crazy, but they're pulling them off of the carbs. I think the same principle can apply. This whole thing about low fat and feed them green beans and carrots to fill them up, well, that's not going to make them feel full because they're a carnivore. I actually go the other way, pull the carbs out, bump up the fat content a little bit. They're going to feel full. They're going to feel like they've had a meal. They're not going to be starving. They're not going to be as likely to be, you know, counter surfing. Well, these are palms. You're probably not getting the counter, but, you know, begging for treats. If they feel satiated and they're getting the right amount of food. So it's actually the carbs that put weight on, not fat. Fat's been vilified for a long time, and it really is not what causes the weight gain. And then, you know, what you said, Dee Dee, about the amount is like so true. I have a 5-pound chihuahua. I mean, she eats a couple ounces a day. So, I mean, how easy is it? I mean, if I added an extra 1/2 ounce consistently to her food, she's going to gain weight. So I do, and it's easy. You know, you give them a couple extra treats. I mean, in the amount of food I feed her, it looks like nothing, you know, like barely covers the bottom of her dish. But if I feed her even just a little bit more, just because it looks like I'm not feeding her very much, she'll start to gain weight. So you do really need to watch amounts. And for a dog that a new raw feeder with a dog that they're kind of struggling with the weight, I probably would weigh it. And so you know exactly what you're feeding, because the amounts that a little dog would eat, you know, like I said, I know from my own experience, it looks like you're hardly feeding them anything, but it truly is all that they need.
Yeah. And I said to the pet parent who has the overweight 104-pound, you know, golden, I said, look, you'd be better served. The dog would be better served nutritionally if you take all of those veggies out of the diet instead of pulling back, consistently pulling back on the protein fat blend that you have.
In my mind, it doesn't really make any sense at all to be pulling broccoli out of the diet, which, although, as we said before, I don't think there's a great need for dogs to be eating a lot of produce, but is this still a whole food? We know exactly what we're feeding. So you're going to pull that out because you're worried about what effects it might be having on the thyroid and metabolism. But you've got six supplements, and I'd bet anything that there's enough ingredients in those supplements that you have no idea what effect they're having or how they're interacting. So between those six supplements, you know, you could have over 100 different ingredients that you're giving your pet, many of which, you know, could be synthetic. So you have no idea how those are interacting in the body or interacting with each other and what effect they're having. But you're going to take the broccoli out of the diet? Like, I'd put the broccoli in. If I had to choose between the two, I'd pull the supplements out and give the dog a little broccoli, because at least it's a whole food. You know what you're giving the animal. The supplements, they can really be a crapshoot.
Right, right. I know a lot of people use the supplement glucosamine and chondroitin. Well, there's a lot of not so good glucosamine and chondroitin supplements out there. And I always say, look, let's at least look at what is in a whole food that has a great amount of glucosamine and chondroitin. Duck feet, chicken feet, and raw trachea. Those are three right there. Mm-hmm. And yes, we can look at some pure, something that's more pure in the glucosamine and chondroitin. But also, the biggest factor is making sure that there's nothing in the dog's diet that is inflammatory, right? So those two have to go together. We can't be doing things that cause inflammation in the body and then just give a glucosamine chondroitin supplement. So that's something that we may want to talk about on the next podcast as well. But listen, if you guys, you know, you have questions, you have recommendations from your vet, and you just aren't sure why you're getting this recommendation or what treatment path you should take, I really want to encourage you to set up a phone consultation with Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K. She is the cancer vet. I say she's the cancer prevention vet because she does both. And if your dog has a cancer diagnosis, you want some alternative out-of-the-box treatments, I would definitely contact her. And you want to prevent your dog from getting cancer, contact her as well. And you can find her at drjudyholisticvet.com. Remember to go to my website, rawdogfoodandcompany.com. Sign up for notices for our webinars because we're going to be doing new feeder webinars. We'll have Dr. Judy doing webinars. Neely Piazza will be doing webinars. And you don't want to miss those. So I hope that you have a great week, Dr. Judy Jasek, and that we just so appreciate all the time you spend with us here on the Raw Dog Food Truth and the work that you do. You've got a new article. That article, you guys, Raw Feeding versus Kibble, is now at dogsnaturally.com. You can find Dr. Judy's article there, an extended article from the one that I have on my website, and she will be contributing articles to that fantastic website on a regular basis. So we're excited about that. And I know you're having fun doing all of that. So we thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm happy to, I'm happy to be able to educate people. I mean, there's just so much confusing information out there. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to help sort some of it out.
Oh, snap, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.